It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, happy first Friday in March, third month beginning 2026. And best I can tell, it has no desire to slow down. Kind of like hang on to your hat, especially a lot of news going on around the world. But we're going to focus in on Rural Matters stuff today. And back with me from, and previously been on the show several times, friend of the show, I like to say, Tim Ray. Tim, Dean of Ag Science and Technology at Shemeketa Community College. And Tim, you know, first of all, welcome to the show. But, you know, you've studied ag at good old Oregon State University.
I did.
Why don't you just give the people that don't know you a little bit of a cliff note version of your academic and career life?
Academically, I graduated high school in 1990, went straight to Oregon State University, actually as a physics major, until I was introduced to differential calculus the first week of my college career. And we lasted about 10 days and decided to part ways and have never spoken since.
Calculus. God. That'd be the bane of my existence.
It was.
How long? I would have lasted like 10 minutes.
Well, technically, I stayed as a physics major until the end of winter term, and then I actually changed to agriculture, honestly, because my high school agriculture told me that's what I was going to do, and so I did. Finished my bachelor's of science in general ag in 1995. Worked for a living, sold cars, and then actually worked on a tree nursery. Went back to my roots in ag and worked on a tree nursery in Kellogg, Oregon, just outside of Elkton for a while. Elkton is down the Roseburg area, Douglas County.
Southern Oregon.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Not quite, but getting there.
Yeah. Did that for a while and then actually went back to grad school at Oregon State again to become an ag teacher and teach high school ag. So I did that in 98, 99, started teaching ag in 99, again in Southern Oregon at Eagle Point. Did that for 5 years and then moved up to the Valley to Dallas, Oregon, and was one of the ag teachers there from 04 until 2013. Left in 2013, got a bug in my ear, wanted more school. So I went back to graduate school at the Ohio State University. I'm contractually obligated to say the.
Well, isn't that like when you're watching like Sunday Night Football?
Yes.
And they got the players and they go, the Ohio State.
That's exactly
so, yeah,
right.
You better say that.
Every sign on campus says the.
So where do your loyalties lie, Buckeye or Beaver? Where are we at here?
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's sports, you have to go with Buckeye because the Beavers couldn't beat their way out of a wet paper bag, unfortunately.
Well, yeah.
But I still, I mean, I'm a Beaver forever, but I... If someone says OH, I will say IO. That's just the way it is. Just the way it is.
Well, it's a formidable school.
It
with
is.
A huge, well, football history plus whatever.
Well, and a beautiful campus in Columbus. I mean, 60,000 students.
Wow.
I mean, it's a city upon a city. And finished my master's degree in 2015. Was on a PhD track. My wife had some health issues, and so we ended up coming back here in 2016. And worked for the Department of Ed before I went back to Dallas as their CTE coordinator, career and technical education coordinator, where I got to oversee all of the CTE programs. The trades that I know, you know, we'll talk about is a piece of that later. And then Shemeketa plucked me to come be the dean when they opened their new Ag Hub in 2021. And then I still persevered. I wrote my dissertation as I was full-time dean at Shemeketa, finished and published it, and walked in May of 2024, earning my PhD in agricultural communication, education, and leadership.
Incredible, you know. And you've, you know, from bouncing around from Oregon to Ohio State, and then literally bouncing around Oregon itself,
yeah,
you know, from high school to being at Shemeketa. Yeah. What's your, let me frame this way, because we've got some good time together, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school in Northwest Iowa, Christian College, Dort University.
Okay.
And coming from Mount Angel, going to Northwest Sioux Center, Iowa. Now, both Mount Angel and Sioux Center are huge ag areas.
Yeah, all of Iowa is. I mean, you get out of Des Moines, it's all corn and beans.
Yeah, but here in Oregon, or here in the Willamette Valley, you've got probably 30 things growing, and it's distilled down there in the Midwest, to, as you just said. But the people take away hard working people.
Yeah.
Incredible. You are in the Midwest, the Bible Belt. What's some of your takeaway from being in Ohio?
Oh, it was, it was a wonderful experience. It was an interesting time in our life, just because I had, like I said, I had 14 years in the high school classroom, and I just had this little voice in my head that said, hey, maybe you've done all you can do here, right? We'd had some great success with students and FFA and ag in Dallas. We'd really kind of turned that program around. I didn't do it by myself. Had a great teaching partner, had great students that believed in what we were doing and wanted to do better. And budget cuts happen in education, and that's a whole different subject that we can go down that hole if you want to. But budgets get squeezed in education every 2 years in Oregon, as everybody knows. And we had gone from a two-person program to a one-person program at Dallas, and we were still trying to do just as much, and you end up feeling like a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest, right? And you're just always picking yourself back up. And we'd had great success. We had students that won state level contest and represented Oregon on the national level 2 years in a row, back to back in the same subject. And that, I mean, that's hard to do.
We're talking FFA here.
Yeah. But think about winning, two state football titles back to back. It's similar, right? And so there was just something in my head that said, hey, what if we, instead of being an ag teacher, what if you went and became the teacher of ag teachers and could develop the next generation of? And so that was the ultimate goal when I went to Ohio State, was get a tenure track position at a land grant university, become a teacher educator, and influence other young educators as they. I like to think of teaching as it's an art, right? It's an evolution, and where you start is not where you end. And the shorter we can compress that cycle, the quicker we get to truly effective teachers that
Wonderful.
Are. I mean, even day one teachers are making an impact, but if you can compress their, give them more experience, more context, they can make a bigger impact that much quicker. And that's really what I think if you boil education down, we're really just trying to guide students into figuring out how they best learn, discover what their own skills are, and teach them how to hone those skills and turn them into their career as quickly as possible.
Well, you're making a point that back when I was at Silverton High School, and I graduated 1980, and I remember one of our civics classes, one of the teachers made this comment kind of just out in the general audience, and it was, hey, he goes, we're not here, teachers, to teach you guys what you're going to be or what you're going to do. We want to teach you how to learn. We want to teach you how to be objective. Mm-hmm. Now, Silverton had a relatively, still does, solid FFA program.
Oh, one of the best.
And they had a pretty good shop.
Your ag teacher? Did you take ag?
I did not.
Okay.
I believe his name was Tim Fowley.
Okay.
This would have been back in the 80s.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he really had a genuine heart for all things FFA, ag. And he really was compassionate about the shop, the welding stations. Yeah. Guys were taking their cars in before school started, and the doors were open. They had the tools, but you break it, you own it.
Right,
I tell you, and those guys and gals too, for that matter, because the gals were starting to get in at this time, Tim.
Yep.
And you see them today at a class reunion, which I was at this past summer for my class, and you do all right. They may not have wound up doing you know, being an auto mechanic, but you know what? They were able to get onto a big farm and be very handy over there.
Yeah.
And those kind of things were amazing. So I go back to what you just said. That teacher outside of the ag thing was, hey, we're going to teach you algebra. We're going to teach you math and some skills, but we're not here that's going to be up to you, but we want you to know how to learn how to do it if that's what you're going to be good at, right?
Yeah. I like to say teachers should teach students how to think, not what to think.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's a big deal right now.
Right.
It's a big deal right now.
Right.
Tim, going forward then, and we've got just 20 seconds before the segment, and we'll bring this into the other side. How do you want to see education go going forward?
I can't do that in 20 seconds. We'll do that on the other side.
We'll do that on the other side. Got Tim Ray. Tim Ray, Dean of Ag and Technology, Chemeketic College here in Salem, and also so active as a commissioner at Polk County Fair. We're going to talk about that a little bit later too. Jake, Rural Matters, hang on. We will be back.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, Salem, Oregon, heart of the valley and capital of this state. A lot going on, so much going on, and trying to keep it all straight, but we're just going to talk about education today a little bit. Tim Ray, have had you on before, and I really find you highly informative. You've tremendous background in education from your own perspectives, going to Ohio, picking up degrees. I mean, how many acronyms do you have behind your name right now?
Yeah.
How many?
I mean, kind of the rule is that you only list the highest one. So I don't list the master's degree. It just says PhD after my name, which I swore I'd never do, but I do.
It's kind of solid.
It is.
I'd be all right with that. I've got a BA in communication, so that's about as high as I got. You know, Tim, we were talking previous segment about education and where it's going.
Yeah.
And when I got out of college in 84, homeschooling was starting to become a perspective. And in all of your years from high school and being involved in Chemeketa, where can we improve? Oregon isn't doing great on the national level, Tim. I see numbers, they're not good. We're like 47 or 48th. If you had the world, Tim, to make some changes, according to you, what would you like to see happen?
I've said this many times before, and I'll say it here as well. And I say it a little bit jokingly, but not entirely. At some point when I'm czar of education in Oregon, I think one of the first things is, and I'll say it the way I normally say it, I would fire every teacher. But I would hire them back immediately, but I would change their title to Community and Workforce Development Officer.
Okay. Go ahead and elaborate on that.
Because I see that as our biggest role in education is point to a student, name a student who's not going to join a community or a workforce. And so it changes the context, I think, around what. Because one of my biggest pet peeves, and I got this from Dr. Whittington at Ohio State, is when you ask a teacher what they teach, what do they almost always say?
English,
the subject
or math,
that they teach.
History, sure.
They teach students.
Right.
Right? English or ag or math is the vehicle by which they teach students. But when you're so focused on that I teach English or math or science or basket weaving or home ec or whatever it is, you lose the context. Education is 95% relationships, 5% all the other minutia that has to happen. Where do we spend 95% of our time? The minutia, and we neglect to develop relationships. And so then when we have behavior problems and conflict and things like that in classrooms, we don't have the ability, because we haven't developed the relationship to resolve that.
Okay.
Right? And so I just think at sometimes we step over the very basics in education to get to the really advanced thing so that we can brag and say, our high school students are graduating with calculus credit. And my question is, can they actually do calculus, or did they just get the credit for calculus?
Okay, so let me frame this to you, because you opened up a little bit of my brain, which is amazing. So, going to college, Christian school, and they one of the things that I learned from the get-go, my first week of school, was they framed education, first of all, as a Christian, that you're serving God in whatever you're going to do. But what I learned quickly was history wasn't just history. English wasn't just English. Math, they were all related to each other. I think this is where we're... So if the history is going to help you with the math is going to help you with the history.
But they're taught in silos here. They're never connected. Yeah. The English teacher never communicates with the math teacher and says, hey, you know what? We're doing a timeline project. It'd be really cool if you taught number lines.
Yeah.
No concept of that whatsoever, right?
Yeah. So, you know, you bring up something that I think is really relative, and we need to look at this. I want to incorporate, because we're talking about education, your role in agriculture. Mm-hmm. How have you seen from the late 90s going forward to today and trades, teaching trades?
Yeah.
And I even would dare say that I get a sense that young people, even urban young people, are drawn to what Chemeketa would offer, or what FFA or what is offered. What do you see happen in the 20 some years?
I think it's, you know, it's interesting. I think back, and actually I'll tell a story that actually just happened last week. I have a former student and her brother are slowly taking over dad's farm. I had them both as high school students.
Sure.
One went off to college, got a four-year degree. One stayed directly on the farm. Now they're both back on the farm working together. They're all working with dad, but there's a succession plan, right? And they text me every, I don't know, two or three times a year, just to stop by the farm. They're developing other enterprises, and they just want input on what they're doing and little ticks and trips and things like that. And so texted me last week and said, hey, they're starting a small greenhouse business, and said, hey, it's plug day. Stop by if you're interested.
So it's plug day.
Plugs are plant starts that come in little plug trays, right? And so they were planting their hanging baskets that day. She pre-sells hanging baskets and grows them and then delivers them for Mother's Day. And so
coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I happened to be out at the county courthouse, county commissioner meeting, and so I texted, I'll stop by on my way back home. And so I stopped by, and we were talked about some things, and I gave her some advice and helped plant a few plugs and, you know, get her baskets to where most of the industry is. And, you know, and she was telling me about there was a whole slug of students that came through about their time. Her and her brother, I think, are 2 years apart, but there was a whole slug of students that came through the ag program that are still in that community. And she was rattling off. She's like, you know, one of them bought L&L, the chainsaw repair place, run by a former student now. One is a mechanic, and they're thinking about branching off on their own and becoming their own, right? Buying a service truck and going out and being a mechanic. And it just really made me reflect the success all of those students have had at various levels of education. One went off, got a four-year degree. Three just wanted to work, and they have a work ethic that make it doable, right? Yeah. They're all making a living doing the things. And it's the, what most Americans would call the dirty work,
right?
They're doing, it's trades adjacent, right? They're not digging ditches. They're not pulling wire. They're not doing that kind of stuff, but they're mechanicking, they're business, they're small business owners. They're all of those things. And I just, I think of my own son as well. He turned 24 yesterday, has never taken a college class, is an ASE certified mechanic, for a dealership, making good money because he has a work ethic. And we talk about it often. He's like, Dad, I don't get these people I work with. They show up late, they leave early and complain about not making money. And he's like, I'm pretty proud of where I'm at. And I said, you absolutely should be. It, right? It's work ethic. It's the thing we don't necessarily teach in education that is, in my opinion, one of the biggest factors that determines your success in life.
You know, we got less than a minute. Is that something that I think needs to get hammered home?
Yeah.
Because I tell you, the ones that show up early and stay late, mm-hmm. and they stay away from drama,
mm-hmm.
they stay away from the water cooler topics. Right. If they're, you know, they try and stay as Switzerland neutral as possible. But if you can get that in the young people, and that they're not entitled,
mm-hmm.
because that's the other part of the equation that affects mm-hmm. us badly.
You only earn what you work for.
Exactly. And that way, you will go far. Mm-hmm. And like your son's mm-hmm. doing, I mean, he's mm-hmm. he's going to always have a job.
Mm-hmm.
He's always going to have a job. Mm-hmm. Tim Ray, ag director and tech director at Schmeckita. This is Jake Real Matters. We're going to be back after the news. Hang on. Back after this.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters of 1430 KYKN.
Jake, Rural Matters, spring, going to be around the corner, but it is March. It didn't quite roar in like a lion, like it can, but it's still early. So with me today, I'm so happy to have Tim Ray. He's Dean of Ag over at Ag Science at Schmeckita, and also he's the tech advisor as well there, and they go hand in hand, don't they? You know, we were talking about integrating what history means to English, what English would mean for math and science and all of that stuff. How does agriculture and tech knowledge come together? A lot of changes.
How does it not? I mean,
exactly right.
Step in a piece of equipment right now, and it's all touch screen and satellite
drones.
And, yeah, all the things. And so, I mean, it just. People don't understand the technology it takes to produce the food, fiber, and fuel that they rely on every day.
You know, we still see, you go by the grass seed fields, you still see the people with hose and buckets and keeping things going correctly that way. But
not for long.
Not for long.
Labor's too expensive.
It is. It really has. And yet machinery is expensive too. So how do we find the sweet spot there?
Yeah.
How do we work that through?
Automation.
Automation.
I mean, that's where it's going to, I think, where we're headed is... John Deere's focused on automating big equipment. I think realistically, we're going to need to automate small and mid-sized equipment that can run 24 hours a day and not have to pull, you know, 16-row toolbars, but can pull a 4 or 8-row toolbar, but go 24 hours a day. And one operator in a command center like this could operate 3, 4, 5 machines, right?
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
You're almost NASA-like.
Yeah, very much.
Almost like sitting in a type of a Pentagon situation where you've got... Yeah. And it is because, you know, it really started to strike me about, 15, 16 years ago, your cell phones started to become your mini handheld computer. And here in Oregon, like I said, could come in roaring like a lion or not with the rain. And here in Oregon, you've really got to figure out what the weather pattern's mm-hmm. going to be. And they're pulling up, 3 miles away, it looks like we're going to have rain, but we're not going to have it over here. And it's just incredible what takes place. What are some of the biggest things that you've seen in your career, either at, you know, from Dallas to Schmeckita?
Just, the level of technology integration that's making its way even into smaller operations. Again, because labor is usually one of the largest inputs we have, you just have to minimize it as much as possible, which is unfortunate because that's people's livelihoods and things like that, right? And it's a really tricky subject, and it's a, you know, double-edged sword. You want to help employ people with living wage jobs, but when you don't have control over your commodity price, it's sold on an open market, and you have no guarantee, even if you have a contract, it's about as worth what the paper it's written on is, right? I mean, grass seed contracts get ripped up and modified all the time. Hazelnut, right? I mean, hazelnuts made money this year. Who knows if they'll make money next year? It's been a while since grass seed has made money. As you know, you used to be able to at least cash flow dairy farms. Now you can't even cash flow dairy farms. And so it's just getting harder and harder.
And within the past 20 years, automation has become, they've got robotic milkers now. DeLaval's.
Only way to do it.
Yeah, it really is, because it's not just, when you talk about labor, particularly in the dairy industry, which is, depending on your farm, whether it's a 24-hour, 7-day a week deal, or our place was more like 16 hours a day, but if something went wrong, it turned into 24-7.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the robotics took away the fact that you would have such a hard time getting anybody to want to milk your cows on Christmas or on a weekend. And it's understandable. Yeah. And so people are turning that way. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of technology, it starts out hugely expensive and not nearly as good, but trial and error dials it down. Yep. And now you just make sure that you keep that robotic machine, that thing doing its best.
Which actually creates more jobs on the other side, right?
Oh, yeah.
Maintaining and repairing that type of equipment is a better use, honestly, of human brain space than pulling on 14th.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I mean, realistically. So.
And the cows actually adapt to it.
Absolutely.
They love it.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
And what it does, it will, if you're the type of farm that is cash flowing, it's a tremendous sigh of relief, because you don't have to look out your window to see if your guy or gal showed up at 1 a.m., which, by the way, I did, and they did.
Right.
99%, but there's always that. It takes that out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And the larger farms are going to go the carousel route. And those are for people. Just picture a carousel like down at Salem.
Yep.
Only
but it's cows instead of people.
100. They can put 100.
72s are pretty common. Yep.
And that is the way to go. And the cows love that as well. Mm-hmm. Technology. I want to throw props to your Schmeckita because, talk about what an advantage it is for young people if they're not quite sure about where they want to go. And they go to Schmeckita for a 2-year, maybe just a year, and then they decide to go to Corvallis or Eugene or PSU. Plug that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the downside is we are 1/3 the cost and we have smaller class sizes. But once people get over that, they realize that those are both benefits, right? Because it's more expensive doesn't make it better. We just are simply more affordable, and we're more receptive and more responsive to the needs of students. And we have, with all of the degrees and certificates available, it's nearly 100 different certificates or degrees, counting all the transfer degrees and the CTE degrees that people can explore. My own daughter found her path there. She didn't really know what she wanted to do and found criminal justice. And now she's on a trajectory to be on her career and absolutely loves it.
Good for her. My daughter did 2 years there and then wound up in Corvallis. Mm-hmm. And it was such a help for her. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it too, Tim, is that you can have a part-time job.
Yep.
You still love your folks and they still love you, and you can commute, do that. And I think it's a great stepping stone. Mm-hmm. If you're not full on knowing what you're going to do, give it a shot.
Oh, absolutely.
How about us older folks? What's the oldest student you see there? I've never asked you this.
Oh, well.
Is there hope for me?
Yes. Yes. I mean, the age range is from right out of high school into their 50s, 60s, and 70s in some of our, non-credit classes that are really just designed either for fun or to skill up. CDL program that we've talked about.
Yeah, we did that last time in the fall.
Folks in their 50s come back all the time for that. Our bachelor's program in leadership and management, the average age there is in the 30s. It's meant for people that are mid-career and just needing a step up. And so, we see our age range is vastly wider than that it is of 4-year universities.
I think it's a blessing. It really is. I want to switch gears with you, Tim. I mean, if you weren't busy enough, the Polk County Fair, and we've got 2 minutes left in this segment. Let's talk a little bit about how it's holding out right now, and then we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive on the other side.
Yeah, the fair's in a challenging space right now. The county Polk County's facing some financial situations itself, as most counties and cities in Oregon are. The tax structures are 1980s based, when timber money was a thing, and so that set permanent tax rates with the infusion of federal timber dollars. And now those federal timber dollars are gone, and the tax rates are the same.
And it makes it hard to keep.
Makes it almost impossible to keep lights on, keep officers on the roads, keep all of those things.
And so, what do you think? Where is this going?
Well, the fairgrounds is going to need financial support from the citizens of Polk County if it's going to stay open. I mean, that's just point blank. We're going to need to pass an operating levy, or the fairgrounds will close.
Yeah, that's the immediate. So they will have it. As far as you know, it will be going this year.
We will have a 2026 fair. I cannot guarantee a 2027 fair.
Not at this time. So we're waiting for the midterms. All right, we're talking with Tim Ray, and of course I mentioned he's ag director at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem, and with that also marries the tech part of it as well. Very full, very busy and exciting thing to be in there. We're going to talk about Polk County Fair a little bit. Jake, Rural Matters. We'll be right back after this.
Back to the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters. Glorious Friday to you all. Beautiful month of March, and it is the Lent season as well for many of us. Very important time as we get ready for Good Friday and Easter coming into April. Just a month away. Unbelievable. Feels like Christmas just happened, right? Tim Ray with me, Ag Director, Dean of Ag at Chemeketa, and also the Technology Department as well. All right, country's having its 250th birthday, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more Americana than the county fair, state fair, picnics.
That's what I believe.
And so, Polk County Fair right now, is it fair to say it's kind of on a life support? Where are we at?
Yeah. This time last year, the county put an operating levy on the May ballot, and we made a pretty hard push. It's hard to get the message out in that short of amount of time. And honestly, we didn't have the same information we have today. At no point during that discussion did the county really realize or tell us that if without that, the fairgrounds would cease to exist.
So you were left purposely in the dark?
No. The county just didn't really realize the budget cliff that they were facing, right?
Okay.
Beginning fund balance has continued to erode over the last several years. And there's been, the year that no one speaks of, 2021, the COVID year,
yeah.
The feds were throwing money everywhere. And so counties, cities, states were able to backfill things. And like all good government does, they're like, oh, we have this money. We'll fill it here. We'll figure out how to fix it later.
Okay.
Well, it's later.
Yeah.
And COVID money's dried up. It cannot go past June of 2026, right?
Where we are now.
Yep.
Getting there.
Yep. And so there's no more backstops. Look at the legislature's in short session right now trying to fill a $300 million hole in ODOT. And from other things that are not entirely federally inspired, but tax structures are what they are. I don't want to get in a whole political thing, but Oregon seems to believe that the only people that can fund Oregon is Oregonians, and we don't want any help from anybody who visits the state and uses all the infrastructure of the state. Please come use it, abuse it, and then go back home and pay us nothing. And I've always struggled with that, but... and then even, county finances, city finances, and I talk about this, I was on another podcast about a month ago, people in Polk County pay their property taxes and they look at their property taxes and they see the statement and they see the amount and they go, oh my goodness, Polk County is just taking money in hand over fist. Where's the millions of dollars? And the truth is for most people in Polk County, the smallest portion of their property taxes is the portion going to the county. Their largest portions are going to cities and to other educational bonds, most of the case. And I use my own. I live in West Salem. I'm a Polk County resident. I live in this inside Salem city limits, but in Polk County, my property taxes are $6,400 a year.
Okay.
$580 of that goes to the county.
Yeah.
The rest goes to city and education.
Right.
So nearly over 5,000 of that $6,400 goes to every other place except the county where I receive my services.
Right.
And people have a big misunderstanding about county finances and where all that money comes from. And
Yeah. Counties
don't have the ability. I mean, City of Salem, I get my water bill. The smallest part of my water bill is the water.
Right.
Right? It's franchise fees and light fees and all the other things that cities have the ability to tack on. Counties can't do that.
Yeah.
And okay. So, right, it just gets challenging. Finances get really challenging on a county when you're trying to support 88,000 citizens spread over that many miles with sheriff's offices and all the county services that need to run out of all of the, right?
Yeah.
Different things. And the fairgrounds, unfortunately, is a part of that and covers a good chunk of its operating costs, but not all of it.
Yeah.
And for years now, we've had deferred maintenance.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars of deferred maintenance. And that's really, the county is unable to continue to pump the $300,000-$500,000 a year into the deferred maintenance.
So you know you look at this situation, and I know you've had meetings there, and so the good news is that it will go this year.
Yes.
So if there are young people, and we really believe in young people, the 4-H'ers, the FFAers, and even the smaller groups yet, they've already invested in their animals.
Yep.
That they've bought them already probably back in October for all we know.
Some of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm glad about that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I share on this program, and I've shared it with you and many others that listen, is what a joy it is to see the young people so amped up.
We love having you there, right across from the show ring.
Well, I think we plan on doing it
awesome.
Again. It was mentioned to me from Jeff Morgan. He said, "I think we're going to do it again, Jake."
Good.
So we'll see. I hope to.
Yeah.
And you know, we did Marion County, and sitting across from me, Hunter Newton. We did the rodeo there by the state fair.
Nice.
Oh yeah. And
yeah.
It just gives you a side of young children. I don't want to say children, but young little leaguers and up, if you will, age wise, that are so on fire with such passion for such a wonderful thing. We're not talking sports here. We're talking animals and projects, trying to make money and learning, which, you know, helps. Well,
it goes back to the work ethic we talked about earlier.
Correct.
That's one of the best ways to instill work ethic.
Yeah. So let me throw this at you.
Yeah.
Does the fair in Polk County need to get privatized? Is there businesses that would want to take over? Is there some way to, outside of the elections coming up, you know, talking midterms or a levy or a bond. I mean, does it have to come where some people just sit there and say, I don't want this to go down.
Yeah.
What do we got to do to make this work? Or can we partner?
We're open to private partners.
What does it take?
Private public partnerships, right? If somebody wanted or needed to lease a building long-term or a part of a parking lot or something like that to become, the Willamette Valley center of whatever.
Right.
We're open to those conversations. The challenge for the county is they can't sell the property. It's zoned exclusively fairgrounds. And
sure.
That zoning can't be changed, right?
Okay.
And many counties in Oregon are that way. There's 36 counties in Oregon. They all have a county fair.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get to a point where there's only 35 county fairs or 34 or 30 or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so, yes, we are open to, you know, and we had a work session beginning of February and biggest work session we've ever had. We have a work session every year as a fair board, invite the public in, and normally there's 25 to 30 people there. We had over 200 people there.
I heard.
Which was amazing.
It
was a great turnout. It was a great meeting. We got a lot of great ideas. I think people were challenged with, they wanted answers that just don't exist yet.
Okay.
Right? And so there was some people I know left a little disappointed because they didn't get answers to the questions. There weren't answers to yet.
Right.
And so that's challenging. But we have, over the last decade or more, the fairgrounds has worked hard to secure grants and outside funding and all the things. And that you can't run a fairgrounds on grants. You're all, because they're always, you always have to renew them. It's really, really difficult to employ people on soft money.
Sure.
When you don't know if it's coming or not.
Right, right.
And many of those grants require matching funds, which we don't have. And you can't get one grant to use as matching grants for another grant, right?
Yeah.
So it makes it challenging. But we are in the process. We're always continually, Fair Manager is continually scouring, you know, the interwebs looking for funding opportunities, whether that be state money, private money, federal money. We've turned over every rock, and we're returning over every rock.
You know, you and I talked earlier before we came on, roughly 700 events per year. People, I don't, you know, it's like, what?
That's
like two a day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're looking at a complete calendar year.
Yeah.
And
some are big and some are small, but
there's
something happening there virtually every day.
So even right now.
Yeah.
Even right now, whether it's a gun show or an art exhibit or anything.
Or a nonprofit. A lot of nonprofit agencies in the county use it as either a staging facility or a meeting space or, you know, those types of things as well. And if that facility wasn't there, where do those people meet?
Good point. We've got less than a minute, Tim. What would you like to see happen? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I need to remind people that Polk County Fairgrounds is also the designated emergency evacuation center for the county. The county. It's also the reunification center for many of the schools in the county. We hope to never use it for either of those things.
Because it's a bad day.
But I also hope to never call the fire department. But
you're
I'm
right.
awfully glad when I do call that they're there.
For emergency
right?
services.
And so that's the big thing people don't understand is, yes, everybody refers to it to the fairgrounds. It is the Polk County Fairgrounds and Event Center. The subtext is it is also the Emergency Evacuation Center and Reunification Center if and when it's ever needed. And it's when it's needed, it is available at the drop of a hat.
Real quick, is there a place people could get a comment to you?
Or? Yeah, we have there's actually a website, Friends of Polk County Fair, the Facebook page.
Okay.
If you comment there, that will get to us.
All right, Tim Ray, thank you so much. Good to see you again.
Good to see
We're
going to
stay in touch, big guy.
Yeah.
100%. Jake, Real Matters, Tim Ray, Polk County Commissioner, among other things. We'll see you guys next week.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.